Welcome to the Utility Security Podcast, your command center for all things utility security. From power plant warriors to grid guardians, and even curious citizens, this podcast is your essential briefing on keeping up to date with knowledge and insights for securing our nation's utilities. Expert intel through interviews with security chiefs, tech wizards, and policy shapers. Tune in as we explore the latest vulnerabilities, industry best practices, and inspiring stories of resilience from the frontline heroes keeping our grids secure.
Welcome to the Utility Security Podcast. In this episode, we'll be discussing the topic of drones and how to best detect them. I'm here with Leo McCluskey from Echodyne. Welcome, Leo. Before we get started, can you tell our listeners a little bit more about yourself?
Sure, I'd be happy to. My name is Leo McCluskey. I lead the marketing efforts for Echodyne. Echodyne is a radar manufacturer, has some very interesting intellectual property. It allows us to do some creative things, which we'll talk about in this segment. My background has been in large networks and putting things together in unusual ways. So looking forward to having this conversation with you.
I'm so happy to have you here to talk about this topic because I think it's a very important one. As drones become more of a threat, it'll be a great conversation. And I wanted to start the conversation off by talking about the topic of dark drones. What are they and why should utilities be concerned about this?
Yeah, dark drone as a term can sort of feel a bit heavy. But dark drones here really refers to a drone that is, if it has communication between pilot and the drone, that communication is unable to be found. And so, for example, you could have a dark drone, if you will, that's using a 4G SIM card, because once you're in that licensed spectrum, there are no tools that the public can use or even private companies can use that would allow you to peer into licensed spectrum and, you know, licensed services and understand that data. So dark has a very broad connotation from things that are not communicative, that are really you would expect a really bad actor to be able to organize. But also, you know, a dark drone could be something as simple as, you know, little Johnny got his toy and he learned how to change the communication a little bit from a YouTube video. Now, all of a sudden, the tools that are out there can't see it. And so I think that really just points to the challenge that, you know, the drone problem is not singular, that there's a lot of vectors that this problem can take. And so from a security perspective, how we think about drones and how we assess the risk for the area that we're trying to secure become really pivotal in that consideration.
I'm glad you bring some of those points up about the ease of sort of converting and changing up the way drones typically operate and how it's not a high barrier to get over. And we've seen a lot of conflicts all over the world rise in turn in the use of drones that are weaponized or modified in a variety of ways to attack utility facilities. From what we've seen be reported, pretty low cost, easy stuff to do. Sometimes it makes its way out onto the internet, and copycat instances are therefore going to be a little bit more likely. Can you just talk to our listeners more about why they should be thinking about a drone threat plan and why it is such an issue for them to consider?
Yeah, I think, you know, the challenge we're seeing play out in the military space has a lot to do with the economics of the equation. So you've got, you know, drones that might cost $50,000 for a large one and $10,000 for a small one are being taken out by $500,000 and $1 million missiles. And so the economics of the equation are terribly asymmetrical. And so a lot of the work there is how do we get to a symmetry between the cost of taking something out and really there's an equation that we're starting to play around with, which is the cost, the risk of success or chance of success divided by the cost of the counter equipment that one has to put in. But if we think about it in the sort of homeland side and, you know, really into critical infrastructure like the security grid, I'm sorry, like the electricity grid, you know, the real challenge there is I would say two things. One is low cost of entry for somebody who wants to do something bad. And two is YouTube University. One of the things we've seen come out of the Russian war in Ukraine is the speed at which the Ukrainians and Russians are adapting drones and the inexpensive ways that they're adapting drones to be able to deliver lethal payloads or even just crash into something in a way that causes mayhem. And so, you know, what we see and what we've talked with others about is, you know, that we've seen folks responsible for homeland security in the United States really be monitoring sort of internal channels of disaffected persons on the right or the left. And, you know, they're all talking, they're learning from Ukraine. And, you know, what we're seeing in terms of the Russian tactics about using drones to go after the infrastructure in order to go after the morale of the citizens, you know, that can be repeated in the homeland fairly straightforwardly, I'm afraid. And so, you know, when we look at around the world, we see templates for what can happen here. And then we look at the barriers to that happening here, and they're all quite low, which is the real risk.
So kind of building off of that, you know, you all are involved in this segment and focused on detecting drones. You know, what are some instances of drones being used in nefarious ways by bad actors here on our own land that you might want to illustrate to our listeners that will get them thinking about this one?
Yeah, so, you know, I think we're all aware of maybe a year and a half ago that someone tried to fly a drone into a substation in Pennsylvania, and the only reason they weren't successful is because they didn't pilot the craft well. I think on a more broad basis, you know, we hear that there's a lot of drone incursions, drone intruders at secure installations around the United States, governmental installations. And I would say, you know, really bringing it home, we see it at prisons. I mean, if you look at in the news at what drones are doing to prison security, it's tough. You know, a drone flies over, drops a tennis ball that blends in with the ground, or a basketball that blends in with the other basketballs on the court, and it's loaded with contraband. And so, you know, it's the, and what's even more important, or more interesting, I should say, is, you know, 2 years ago when that prison problem started, all of those drones were communicative, meaning you could take a RF tool, radio frequency tool, and be able to find that drone in the sky and then take some action if you could. And 2 years later, they don't see any of them anymore off of those same tools. And that's just how quickly the bad actors have been able to adapt their techniques and tactics in order to get around the security things that are being put in place. So it's a real spy versus spy sort of game going on here, unfortunately, with really bad consequences.
So you're bringing up kind of the challenges of finding a solution, and that transitions to my next question here. And I'm going to kind of shamelessly plug our own publication, Utility Security, because in our March issue, we had drone security expert Bill Edwards on. He really emphasized the approach of a drone detection solution being a layered one that includes RF radar, cameras, and more. And I wanted to ask you if you could talk more about what is the best or best practices or the most effective solutions for utilities to consider when they're implementing a drone detection solution.
Yeah, well, first off, by talking with Bill Edwards, Utility Security Magazine is doing a great service to its readers. He's a very well-informed guy and really knows this space well. So good on you for speaking with Bill. And Bill, he's spot on, right? I mean, there is no answer. There are technologies that one can apply to create an answer that's best for your environment. There's an old saying in the airport industry that when you've seen one airport, you've only seen one airport. And that you can't take one and apply it to others. And I think for security, that's really an important point, is that what I do to secure this facility is going to be different than what I do to secure that facility. And it's going to have a lot to do with what's nearby, what's around me, what I have access to, what the terrain looks like, all sorts of things that go into that planning. But, you know, we make a radar, and I would suggest that radar plus optical becomes your sort of baseline you know, because radar will pick up everything that moves in the airspace and be able to zero in on it. And if you have a good radar, it'll be able to slew your optical. And so that optical follows it around in the sky, giving you smooth panning, which means you have eyes on object. And if you're following the security protocol around OODA, then what, you got to get your eyes on the object in order to be able to take any further steps. And so, you know, we like the chance to talk about how that brings the security team right front and center to be able to follow that object in the sky. But there are acoustic sensors out there. They're really getting a lot of interesting play right now, given that they'll pick up all sorts of sounds in the background. Depends on where you put them relative to your ambient RF noise, but they're an awfully good sensor. We've seen some really interesting things at RF sensors and spectrum scanners, actually, not in terms of the library tools, but more spectrum scanners are doing some pretty clever things. But it really is an all hands on deck sort of problem here. And any person that walks up and says, all you need is this blue box here, is really taking you for a spin, because it's radars, it's cameras, it's RF sensors, it's acoustics. And really what's most important is the software that knits that together into something that the security operators can manage and that feeds into the video management system. So your event recording is taking place that you probably already built in for all of your ground security layers. And so how you integrate that airspace piece in with all of those sensors into the ground security, so you get single pane of glass, same sort of management system across all of that, becomes really an important part of that consideration too.
Okay. You might have already kind of answered this question with this last answer you gave, but I'm going to ask it just in case there's some other context that wasn't illustrated. You know, if there are some utilities that are looking to put some of this technology to use, but perhaps their budget dollars are a little bit more limited, do you prioritize one technology over another versus, you know, kind of which ones would you go with first? I know you kind of answered a little bit, or is there any other factors to consider when you're...
Yeah, this is the $64 million question, I think, actually. You know, there's a lot to consider here. At an event last week, someone from the National Security Council posited that it's very likely the administration or Congress and the administration will produce a sort of a list of approved equipment that can be used, because the challenge here is not necessarily detection and tracking. There are tools out there that the security personnel can turn to, and I'll come back to answer the question more directly in a moment, that they can turn to from a sort of de minimis deployment in order to be able to start understanding what's going on. But then transitioning that into something that's actionable data that I can do anything with is sort of the problem today. The only action one can take today is to call law enforcement professionals and ask them to come and try and make some intervention, because as critical infrastructure, you're prohibited from interfering with anything in the airspace. Mm-hmm. And that's unlikely to change anytime soon until authorities are extended, which is being considered by the Congress now, certainly this year, probably into next year as well. And those extended authorities are what will start bringing the ability for the critical infrastructure to not just be aware, but to also secure the facility. And then you're going to be talking about, okay, now you've got a chain that, you know, from a viewer perspective, goes from sort of detection and tracking, identification. And then once you've got that identification, you sort of reach that point where I got to do something one way or the other. And then what is that action that I can take? And in the civilian side of the world, it's really about low, no collateral interception. And what are the tools available for that? And then what is that particular facility able to do, or their partner in law enforcement, or how the extended authorities, and they're able to take more aggressive intervention tactics. You know, that is where I see this coming to either later this year or certainly into next, because there's a lot of pressure putting in that direction right now. And so when I come back to, like, how would I start today with limited funds? You know, I would say that I would spend some real time kicking tires and talking to people. I would explore the C2. I would be careful about a C2 that comes attached to a particular piece of hardware. You'd almost want something that's very flexible and that you can decide which are the right tools that plug into it and give you that stable security platform that you're looking for as an operator. And so, you know, the baseline tools you're going to have are radar and optical. It's radar picks up everything, communicative or not. optical because you have to have eyes on object. That's your sort of baseline plus a C2. Those are necessary, but maybe not sufficient, to be honest, because you really do want some RF tooling in there, because if from an interdiction perspective, if you can get it with RF tooling, that's great. If you can't, then you're into other sort of mitigation tactics that would be approved along with this. There's a number out there that are being considered, and hopefully they'll come to the aid of critical infrastructure security here before too long.
Okay. You brought up some efforts that are happening in Washington D.C. to change some of those regulations to allow utilities to potentially at some point in the future disable or destroy or take over drones.
Well, they have to be able to do the full chain, right? They have to be able to go all the way to securing the facility from whatever that intruder is. And today they can do that with a ground approach. You know, they can go and apprehend them. They wait for law enforcement to come and take over. They can call law enforcement in. And we need that same sort of way for drones to happen. Drones are a bit more problematic because they're quite tiny. I've seen people use, and these are very experienced military professionals, using guns, whether rifle or handguns, hit the drone 3-4 times, drone keeps flying. So we need some way to assure that once we can get at the drone, that we can mitigate the drone and bring it safely away from wherever harm may be.
But that'll come.
It's hopefully it'll come faster than a bad incident, but it's certainly going to come. I've seen, I've been following this landscape for some years now, and I would say that the sense of urgency I've heard from not only industry, but government professionals in particular is as high as I've ever seen it. So I'm sort of optimistic that we're on the road to putting in place the right sort of laws and legislation that will allow critical infrastructure owners and operators to work with law enforcement to secure that facility so that they can operate with a sense, of ongoing concern, which also means that the communities nearby are fine and can continue to enjoy the American way of life.
Thank you for that. I'd like to wrap up every interview by asking a crystal ball question, which is to kind of use your crystal ball and look into the future 5-10 years from now. You brought up the topic, maybe, the FAA regulations are changed and utilities can do some things to get rid of drones that are entering into their space. Where else do you see technology changing or any other sort of things that might change that impact drone detection and response?
Yeah, in some ways, I think we could learn a lot from what happened after the tragedy of 9/11, 2001. When I look at that terrible event, we took the United States and really the world took a multi-billion-dollar industry and sat it on the tarmac for a week. In the drone space, that's not a multi-billion-dollar industry. So if they sit it for months, who's really going to care? So that's the thing we don't want to have happen, is that sort of risk. But what we learned from that, though, is that government has to play a role here. And so there are the Security Act and a number of other features of government are how, if you are at risk of counterterror, you can apply for government funding, government co-funding, in order to be able to secure that facility from terrorism. A drone is a flying IED. So it's really a form of terror. And I think Russia is proving that dramatically in Ukraine. And so, we sort of crystal ballish, we would see that the drone piece sort of slots into the counter-terror framework with extended authorities that allow you to interdict something in the sky, which is completely illegal on everyone's behalf today. And I think that, it sounds simple, but I would say that the biggest thing over the next 5 to 10 years, frankly, is getting the good drones into the air. It's a little hard to contemplate getting authorities to take bad drones out of the air when we don't have the legislation that puts good drones in the air. Follow me, right? I would love to see security professionals have the ability to very quickly put in place like a drone in a box, where it's a drone that does perimeter patrolling around that facility and then comes and lands and recharges. And you've got two of them. They do it off sync so you can charge each time. And you know, that's really challenging for utility industry today, or really any industry today, is to get that, you know, beyond visual line of sight waiver in order for it to fly around. Once that sort of thing becomes routine, where drones are operating in the air and there's lots of good drones, frankly, it will help identify the ones that are bad, because you'll have an expectation of good as opposed to thinking everything is bad. Today, every drone you see in the air is sort of a threat, because we have no way to identify if that's doing a good mission or bad mission or what it's supposed to do. And so, you know, I think over the next 5-10 years, getting that that drone industry in place, good regulations, good services, ground station services that are looking at the airspace, then that data becomes available, well, not just to the operators of big drones, but to law enforcement and security professionals as a supplemental data service relative to what's going on in their airspace. So now if you're a security utility or utility security professional, when you're thinking about what's happening near my substation, near my power generation plant, near my rights of way and power lines, you have other data sources that show drones in the air, and they're supposed to be there, and they're identified, and that you can identify them as good drones. Because today you can't even do that. So every drone feels like it might be a bad drone. So getting that in place, getting the industry to accept, or getting the public to accept, that there is lots of drones moving around the airspace for good, will I think really help us get the data to minimize the problem we have with bad drones. I think the challenge, though, frankly, is that, you know, the cost of a bad actor, the cost for a bad actor to do something stupid is really quite low, and that's not going to change anytime soon, right? So how we put in place and grant authorities to those who can secure us, and how we get the good drones in the air over the next 5-10 years, that would be, you know, my crystal ball, and hoping it happens as quickly as possible.
I want to echo something you said earlier in the interview. I hope that those changes happen faster than a major event happens. And I want to thank you so much for your time today to talk about this super important topic. Before we go, can you share more info with our listeners about how they can get in touch with you or the folks at Echodyne?
Sure. Echodyne, we're a radar manufacturer. We have an ideal radar for critical infrastructure security. You can find us at echodyne.com. or info@echodyne.com as an email address. We'd encourage you to reach out, talk to our professionals, and learn how we might be able to help. We'd be happy to do that.
Thank you so much, Leo. I appreciate your time today. And to all of our listeners, if you want to stay plugged in with impactful utility security insights and articles and news, please go to utilitysecurity.com today to get your free subscription to our print magazine, listen to podcasts like this, or sign up for webinars or read our online articles. Thank you, everybody, today for listening. Stay safe and stay secure.
Don't forget to visit our website at utilitysecurity.com for exclusive intel, resources, and a community of fellow utility security professionals. Stay safe, stay informed, and stay tuned for your next mission briefing.
The views, information, and opinions expressed during this podcast are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of Utility Business Media and its employees. It is strongly recommended that you discuss any actions or policy changes